The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
A vote on Monday saw Dublin City councillors approve a plan for a large social and affordable housing development on Oscar Traynor Road in North Dublin, and this goes against a previous agreement to allow for 50% of the houses built there to be sold privately. With that in mind, how long will it now take to get the revised plan up and running, and is the decision against private housing a smart one? Well, to talk about all of this and more, I'm joined now by Dublin City Councillor Head of Housing, Brendan Kenny. Brendan, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, the council is a peculiar beast, really. You've got councillors who can have votes on this and that, and then you've got the professionals who actually do the planning and do all the rest of the stuff, who actually run the show. So the professionals are now in conflict with the elected councillors.
Well, I think the first thing to say, Pat, everybody knows there's a housing crisis in Dublin. And back in January 2017, the councillors of the City Council approved a plan for the Oscar Traynor Road site. And we, as the executive, then moved ahead and implemented that. And
OK, so let's make it clear. They gave you the nod to go ahead with all this negotiation and dealing, which gave rise to the plan which the professionals came up with. So the council had actually given its approval for what you were doing.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of time has been spent that. But yes, in January 2017, there was overwhelming approval for the plan for Oscar Traynor Road. And with that mandate, we moved ahead with a very extravagant public procurement process, and it ended up with a preferred bid from Glenveagh, who are one of the top developers in the country. And that would have moved very quickly, but that was rejected in November. Which means that the 853 houses that we had planned to build there are gone, and over 200 of those were for social housing, 171 of those were affordable. So in the context of the crisis, in the context of the people that are not waiting lists, it's a real blow and a blow to our housing programme.
Were you kind of shovel-ready at that point with that developer, or were there more hurdles to be jumped to get to the first digger in the ground?
Because of the nature of the deal that was done and the procurement process, yes, Pat, if that deal was accepted at the council meeting in November, Glenveagh would have lodged a planning application with Bopenola within 6 months. And if Bopenola had agreed that plan, which usually takes about 6 months, they were ready to go on site. So everything going right, they would have been on site with their shovels and their JCBs before the end of 2021.
Now, we will be talking about the Department of Housing and its role in social housing and all the rest of it in a moment. But you're saying that probably late in 2021 or early in 2022, the construction would have begun. That's what you're saying. Now, what is to happen if you're back to square one, which you are, because I presume what is proposed is not exactly the same scheme with different designations for what is built? It'll be a new scheme.
Yes, a new scheme was proposed by the city councillors, and that was approved at the city council meeting on Monday night. And that's fine. We can do that. No problem. But it's back to square one, as I said, Pat. We have to start afresh. And we have already said it publicly. We believe, according to our experiences, this could take 5 to 8 years before we get to the stage that we were previously at. The second thing would be that they can... Sorry, Pat, go on.
No, I want you to finish. Go on.
Yeah, the second thing was that the Glenveagh plan is really a quality design, and I think councillors would agree with me on that. An expensive design, a really, really good project. And if we were to try and copy that plan, it would certainly cost us much more. So while there's an expectation that a plan done directly by Dublin City Council would be less expensive, that won't be the case. We will not be able to get the type of value that we were getting there, which means we will have to reduce the quality in order to try and get the prices down.
The pricing of things is kind of confusing, because I'm looking at some of the Department of Housing figures, which say that the average construction cost of a two-bedroom apartment last year was 230,000, while the average cost of a three-bed house was 214,076 euro, which seems to me remarkably cheap. But is what? Just the cost of putting the bricks and blocks in place. It's not the cost of what they call, it doesn't include the soft costs.
Yeah, we spoke, Pat, only a couple of months about this before. It's depending what figures you're looking at. Like, if you're taking an average for the country, that's usually the starts, the figures for Dublin, because Dublin is very much different. It depends what date the figures are taken from. If it's taken from, say, houses complete in 2019, well, they would have been tendered for in 2016. And also, there's been a big move, certainly in Dublin in more recent years, from houses to apartments, and they cost more. So because there was lots of different figures being bandied around towards the end of last year, we produced figures in December that we published that shows, you know, seven schemes that we're currently working on in the inner city. And it's only in recent years we've started doing new big schemes again. And they're costing an average of 429,000 each. Now, that's everything. That's the construction costs. And as you say, the soft costs, the VAT, the... Yeah.
Does it include the land costs? I mean, do you put as well?
No, we don't have any land costs in the scheme.
In other words, that's still an artificially low figure, because if you're to go into the private sector and buy something, there'll be two extra elements then: the cost of the site, which will have to be factored into each apartment, and also the profit of the developer. Now, the developer and the builder are two separate things. The builder makes his profit, but the developer also wants to make a profit. So there are two profit things there. In the case of Dublin City Council, you as developer don't want to make a profit. So it's only the builder who actually puts the brick upon brick who makes the profit in that equation. But even at 400 and whatever thousand per apartment, that still is not the true cost, because the land, whether or not it's owned by the council, has a value.
Yes, you can say that, Pasha, absolutely.
What's the real cost, say, of the apartments on Dominic Street, for example, because I spoke to you before about these. What is the real cost when you factor in the land cost as well? That's in the centre of Dublin City. What is the cost per apartment in real terms, including land?
It'd be $500,000. It'd be $500,000, Pat.
Okay. Now, you wouldn't find too much built by a private developer in Dublin City Centre for $500,000. That's the truth of that as well. Yeah. So, going back to Oscar Traynor Road, why do you think the councillors changed their minds? Is this something to do with ideology or practicality or what?
It's a difficult one, Pat. There's probably several reasons to it. Like, these days, there's resistance everywhere we try and build housing, no matter what part of the city, particularly for social housing. I think the emphasis on higher rise and higher density has created, while it's inevitable and we need it, it's created inevitable concerns for residents, say, in the suburbs of the city, like the like Coolock, Santry and other areas like that, because they're used to two-story houses, and all of a sudden they see a new development coming in, maybe six, seven stories, high density. So there's huge concerns over that, and they take those concerns out on local councillors, and hence we get a lot of opposition to it.
So it's understandable that the councillors... Yeah, I'm just wondering what the councillors are proposing, because if you're getting a huge number of accommodations, be they apartments or houses on the same site where you had a mixed high-rise development planned by yourselves with the developer for Oscar Traynor Road, what are the councillors proposing? I mean, if they're going to have the same density, they're going to have to go up, aren't they?
Well, I would expect the density to be even higher, Pat, by the time we get around to... going for planning. There was 853 units developed on this, and that was part of the procurement process that started in 2017. The planning regulations have changed since then, so I think any new plan, certainly we probably could get up to 1,000 units on that, so we'd be getting more than what was originally planned by Glenveagh.
Now, one of the listeners wants to know, and perhaps I should have pursued you on it, why Dublin is so much more expensive if we're not factoring in, for example, the land costs, because we can understand in the capital that the land would be more expensive. But if the average around the country for a two-bedroom apartment is 230,000 and it's over 400,000 in Dublin just for the build, never mind the land, what are the elements that make it so expensive to build in the capital?
Well, I think it was always, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, it was always far more expensive to buy a house in Dublin. You know, if somebody was living in Dublin for years and decided to move down to the country, you know, they could pick up a house much, much cheaper down the country. So there's always a difference there. But if you come into an urban district, like you're talking about, particularly if you're going into apartments, you're talking about piling, you're talking about adjoining properties, you're talking about services, utilities, tight sites, difficult deliveries, all that can be adjacent to the loose line, like which is the case in Domley Street. So an urban area is much more difficult. What has really made the difference is the move in recent years from building houses to apartments and high-density apartments. That really has changed the average figures.
Now, one of the texters again is asking, what does the council believe that it's working for the people? He says, we need to change large-scale public housing. Worked in the past, if it can work again. Developers don't care about the fixing the market, because it's the market's unsatisfactory for people on pretty good incomes who still can't afford to get into housing. The market is working just fine for them. That's from Eileen. So the question is, I mean, why did you partner up with a developer rather than go it alone and, you know, provide long-term rental social housing for more people? Why did you agree to partner with a developer where much of the development, 50%, would be for sale?
Well, this development was put together and debated a lot back around the time 2014, 2015. And that was the time, as you know, there was no money. There was no money at all to build houses. So we had to come up with a different plan. And also, people seem to think the fact that we're in partnership with the developer dictates it. The developer is simply doing the development in accordance with what we asked for and in accordance with what the councillors agreed in January 2017. Now, if we were doing a development now, we probably wouldn't be doing it that way. If we do it ourselves, yes, and if we have to do the plan to Oscar Traynor, the point I'm making is it's going to take much longer. And there's no guarantee we'll get it done any cheaper. We certainly won't get the quality that was in the plan that was rejected.
Okay, so you're saying like for like, if you were to do the quality of development that you have proposed, that for the same money you'd get a much inferior product. Does that suggest that really those who are going to buy the private accommodation on Oscar Traynor Road were effectively going to be subsidising those who enjoy the social housing aspect of it?
It may well be the case, and I don't want to use the word inferior. Like, if you drive around town, you can see the difference in quality. Everything these days has to comply with standards, but there can be a huge difference, Pat, when it comes to quality, whether it's the windows, the doors, the facade, all that kind of stuff. And if we want to get cheaper housing, let's say for affordable housing, and the new plan, we certainly won't be able to go and take the kind of quality and get the kind of quality that was there previously. But all the units, all the homes in the Green Blade plan and Oscar Traynor Road were similar. There was no question that the higher, that the private were at better quality than the social or for the affordable.
So social exactly and affordable were all going to be of the same quality as the private. Now, you mentioned that if you had got the nod from the councillors instead of a roadblock put in your way, that this could be shovel in the ground by the end of this year or the beginning of next year. But it has to go to On Board Planola because it's one of those strategic housing developments which kind of keep people out of the loop. But there will be objections to On Board Planola. People will make their feelings felt. Are they likely to object to this? You talk about people lobbying their councillors, which gave rise to this vote, but they're going to be unhappy with this development were it to go forward. But I would put it to you, they'd be equally unhappy with what is proposed by the councillors.
Yes, that I agree with you. And already we're getting concerns from local people about any new plan, and that's one of the reasons the implementation of any new plan would take a long time, is that we'd have to go through a whole new series of consultations with local people. And I think local people would be concerned about the social mix, the tenure mix that's being proposed in the new plan has 40% social housing in it, and that would be normally higher than what we would go for. 30% has been the limit the last couple of years. So I think there will be opposition to that. But Bob Panolo...
Will you parse that for me a bit? One of the texters here on News Talk, Oisin by name, says, your guest is talking about objections to social housing. I think if people had more faith in problem tenants being properly censured or even removed from social housing developments, then people would be slower to object. There are fears you get lumped beside a bad egg and there's absolutely no way to get rid of them. I mean, they have a point. Oisin has a point, doesn't he?
He has a point, absolutely. We've always built good housing in Dublin. the problems usually come from the people living in the houses. So that is an issue, and it's a challenge for us, and we're dealing with that on a daily basis. But we do have 14,500 households on our waiting list, and we have to provide housing for them. But Oisín certainly has a point, yes.
But you know, the idea that if you have mixed housing, it tends to be more stable for whatever reason. Renters, be they in the private sector or residents of social housing, tend not to respect the landlord, be it the city council or a private landlord, tend not to respect that property as much as they would their own property. It seems to be human nature.
Yes,
same with car hires and all the rest of it. They'll bump over the curbs on their private car in their hired car in the way they wouldn't with their private car.
Well, I think in 20, 30 years ago, Pat, we would have built large housing estates, 2,000 houses or 2,800 apartments in Ballymun. They were just too big. They were single tenure. So ever since then, the idea is to go for a social mix or a tenure mix. That brings its own problems. You can have a kind of class war going on as well between people who are owning their homes and the people who are renting. But certainly, smaller housing estates are much better and much easier to manage, and I think that is the way forward.
Hmm. One of the texters says the councillors were trying to prevent the privatisation of public land. They want public housing on public land. And that seems to be an ideological thing, that even though you might partner with a good developer and work out with a product that worked for everyone, because people who can afford to buy private housing have the right to buy it too. It's not exclusively those who will need social housing. But is that, again, an ideological thing, that they don't want any of the public land effectively given to developers?
There's a point in that. But as I said earlier, Pat, we developed this plan in days when there wasn't the money. And the only way that we want to get this site developed was by getting a private developer that would actually build private housing. And there's nothing wrong with private. There's a lot of people out there that need private housing on it. But if we do the plan ourselves for public housing, and we can do that, it will take a long time, absolutely, to do it.
Now, tease out the delays, because a private developer goes to a bank and gets the money, and then may go to another bank to get a bit of mezzanine finance. But they do deals and they lay down and they agree to the rate of interest that'll be paid and all the rest of it. You have a completely different process. I mean, you're depending on the Department of Housing for cash. You've got to find your own resources, and the rates are on holiday at the moment because of the pandemic. And then you're subject to EU tender rules, which a private developer is not. He just picks a builder that he can trust, that he's used before, and who delivers quickly and on time at a price, and off he goes. How long does your process take compared to the private guy?
We can't compete with the private guy. The points you're making there are right, Pat. We're a public body, we're a state body. We have to comply with EU public procurement rules and national public procurement rules for the procurement of design teams or for the procurement of contractors. All that takes time. But there's also all other delays, like approvals, there's consultation, there's all the resistance that we have to put up with. There's all kinds of other kind of studies to be done. But certainly, we wouldn't be able to compete with a private developer, no.
Yeah. One here says, so a developer can build the same housing cheaper for themselves than to build exactly the same for a council. Sounds like the problem is the council. I don't think we're saying that, Brendan. I think... you will put it out to tender and get tenders from a number of contractors before you select. And price is one of the, if not the principal element, it's one of the principal elements.
Well, it's the principal element, Pat. We put everything out to public tender. The tenders go into a box, they're all open together, and whatever developer comes in with what we call the most economically advantageous tender wins the day. They get the contract. And we move ahead from there. Private developers don't have to go through the kind of process that we have to go through. We go through that, and usually it works pretty well. But we got a good value out of the deal in Oscar Traynor Road. The developer, even with the quality that he was giving, were giving us houses for 390,000, whereas it's costing us 430,000 to build ourselves. that we, private developers wouldn't always do that, but that was the benefit that we extracted from this deal. And I think people don't realise the benefits that were coming out of this deal.
But I had the Minister for Housing on, Dara O'Brien, the other day, and we were talking about the fact that you have to go back to square one. So even though a private developer says, Acme Construction did a great job for me, I'll use them on my next project, you can't do that. So you've got to go back in and let everyone have a go who gets over a particular threshold. And even if somebody made a mess of something, you can't blacklist them. You know, if they made a mess of your last project, you can't blacklist them.
You're correct, Pat. Unless we have very, very, very clear evidence that can back that up, no, we can't turn it down. Otherwise, we end up down in the forecourts for a long time. Yeah, they're the disadvantages that we have. But we have to live with those disadvantages. If I could take up the phone and ring a contractor and say, can you go out and build these houses, we could get it done and get it done very quickly and probably get it done well. But no, there's a process that we have to go through. They're the EU rules, regulations. We have to live with those. And we have to try and get through them as fast as we can. But yes, we're stuck with all that.
So, Brendan, is this the end of the matter on Oscar Traynor Road? Will you now go back to the drawing board, tear up the deal you had with the private developer? And I don't know whether they have any recourse, having, you know, expected to be building and doing the deal and planning. They've put in an awful lot of money, I suspect, into their efforts. Is that it? Is it over, or can the councillors be persuaded to change their minds for good or ill?
We would really hope the councillors would change their mind. And in fairness, we've been having discussions with the minister and his officials in the department to see if there's some way that the deal that was on the table, that it could be enhanced in some way, that the affordable houses could be made more affordable, if there was a couple of other things that could be done. And in fairness to the department, they're looking at that. So if they do come back with some possible enhancements over the next few weeks, we'll bring it back to the councillors and we'll have another shot at it.
All right, Brendan, I thank you very much for joining us on the programme and for your frankness in all of this. It's not often public officials are as direct as you tend to be. Brendan Kenny, Dublin City Council Head of Housing, thank you very much for joining us.